Welcome to Franchise Empires, where aspiring entrepreneurs learn exactly what it takes to become a successful franchise owner, from one location to 10 and beyond. I'm the Wolf of Franchises. All right, Wolfpack. Today in the show, we have an Ask Me Anything, actually. So no guest today. I go through questions that I crowdsource from Twitter, talking about, can you negotiate a franchise agreement at all with the franchisor? How do you buy a Chick-fil-A? What are the best back office solutions for new franchisees? What's the difference between a chain and a franchise? Who will win the Nashville Chicken Wars? And a few other questions. I hope you enjoy and give me some feedback if you want on Twitter. Thanks.
The Wolf of Franchises is the CEO of Wolfpack Franchising, as well as a creator at Workweek Media. All opinions expressed by the Wolf and podcast guests are solely their own opinions and do not reflect the opinion of Wolfpack Franchising or Workweek. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as a basis for investment decisions. The Wolf, Workweek, and Wolfpack Franchising may maintain positions in the franchises discussed on this podcast.
Guys, we're just going to jump right into it. So, first question, can you negotiate a franchise agreement? And how much, if any, of it is truly negotiable? I'm going to say, and I'm sorry for buyers who might be disappointed to hear this, but you really can't negotiate the royalties, the franchise fees, tech fees, anything like that. It's pretty much either a take it or leave it proposition. And something that newer buyers might not realize is that if the franchisor was to give you a discount, let's call it, on the royalty or any of the mandated fees, they then have to disclose that to every future new franchise buyer that, hey, we did cut a deal with person XYZ and they're getting a 10% lower royalty or, you know, some discount on one of our other fees. And that creates a very slippery slope where all of a sudden, as soon as you give it to one person, every other person's going to say, hey, well, I want that too. So expect any attempt at negotiating those fees to be met with a very quick put down. And look, are there exceptions to this rule? Yes. I have heard of multiple scenarios where a franchisee who owns maybe 15, 20, 30 locations for a brand and is a good champion for the brand and helps the franchisor with new initiatives, yes, they can get a discount, but they earn their way to those conversations. So look, if you're a first-time buyer, I mean, the reality is 99% of franchises are going to require multiple locations for you to truly earn an income that you're happy with. So that's what the multi-unit operators are looking for when they're evaluating brands. And they are ruthless about this, meaning if they don't think a franchisor's concept works, inclusive of royalties, tech fees, and so on, you know, if those unit economics don't work, they don't spend time trying to negotiate those down because they know that the franchise isn't going to work with that and that it's not worth the franchise buyer's time. So I'd recommend follow their footsteps, be ruthless like them. You know, don't waste energy on nickels and dimes that aren't really going to move the needle for your take-home income at the end of the day. Just determine, hey, are these four-wall economics good enough? After I pay down all my fees, the initial investment, et cetera, am I happy with the profit per location I think I can make relative to the investment? And if the answer is no, move on. Just move on to the next concept. Next question. Ooh, how to buy a Chick-fil-A? That is a loaded one. Super popular question, I'd imagine, from a lot of folks. I don't want to spend too much time on it because I'm sure there's a lot of people who just don't have any interest in owning / operating a Chick-fil-A. And in reality, it's just you're signing up to be an operator, right? You don't own any equity. You can't sell the business for any multiple. Chick-fil-A corporate owns it. You can earn quite an insane amount of money for a single location. We're talking $500,000 or above. So it can be a great deal for someone. But I think that's just really brings us to the point, which is if you actually want to own a Chick-fil-A, that means that you're willing to be in the store for 6 days a week. And yes, there are, again, more exceptions where if you prove yourself, you can get a second and possibly even a third store someday. But again, like you really do have to start out wanting to be a Chick-fil-A operator, wanting to just work in that store all the time. So it doesn't matter if you own 100 McDonald's, you know, they're going to say to that person, hey, that's cool that you're the best fast food operator in McDonald's, but if you're going to work with us, you need to align with our culture and you need to be willing to be in the store all the time. It's just how their model works. So not to mention, we did have a franchisee on the podcast one time who owns a bunch of Sylvan learning centers, who is very close to buying a Chick-fil-A instead. And he was the second to last person in the process, which took 18 months to whittle down and go through Chick-fil-A's due diligence. And he ended up not buying it. But that just shows you, right? They really will try to weed out anyone who isn't serious about the franchise. So yeah, you got to want it, folks, if you're going to get into Chick-fil-A. Next question from Navin Negrani. Any good back office solutions for new franchisees? I'm glad he asked that because it gives me a perfect opportunity to plug Crockett. We are now offering bookkeeping, tax filing, along with our financial data management software that is meant to give you a comprehensive financial picture of your business and or businesses. So whether you own one unit, multiple locations of multiple brands, Crockett can do your bookkeeping, can integrate all those different accounting software accounts and get a real-time picture of your business that you can segment by unit, by brand. You can aggregate it into one view and roll up all the data to view the averages across your locations. It's meant to be, again, just a real-time comprehensive platform for your business that allows you to quickly check the health of any of your locations within a few clicks. So feel free to reach out to us at crockett.com. That's K-R-O-K-I-T.com. Or DM me on Twitter at Franchise Wolf, or reply to the newsletter, you know, any way you want. We're happy to help you there. Next question. What is the difference between a chain and a franchise? Pros and cons. So I would say biggest difference, capital for one, right? If you are the founder of a business, let's call it, it's a coffee chain or one location coffee shop, and you want to expand, you can go the Starbucks route or the Dunkin' route, right? Starbucks owns 100% of all their stores, about probably 95% of their stores. They do franchise in very rare instances and license it via locations in airports and maybe the ones that are in brick and mortar, like retail stores. Like I think Target has Starbucks in it occasionally and Walmart has had Starbucks at times. So those are typically licensees running those locations. But by and large, it's almost 100% company-owned units. And so the difference, right, is Starbucks has had to pay for the construction and development of all those units. Whereas the franchise model with Dunkin', they're outsourcing that to any other individual that buys into their system. And that changes the economics quite differently from a valuation perspective, right? Let's just pretend hypothetically that Dunkin' and Starbucks did the same amount of revenue every year. In reality, I think Starbucks is around $10 billion and Dunkin's around $2 to $3 billion. But let's just pretend they were both doing $10 billion. That's a nice round number. Dunkin' is always going to be valued differently because that $10 million in system-wide revenue isn't going to corporate Dunkin' Donuts, right? They are only collecting 6% of that revenue via the royalty. And they're probably making money by supplying goods to all their franchisees at some markup. So that is their two primary levers to earn what ultimately will be profit, right? And it's very sticky recurring revenue because it only decreases at scale if a bunch of franchisees close their businesses. But as long as Dunkin' is open, operating in thousands of locations across the country, the revenue is going to keep coming in. And they're also going to have customers, quote unquote, to keep selling inputs to, such as coffee beans and napkins and so on. And so that is how the franchisor makes money. And so they're valued very differently economically. Whereas Starbucks, the profit of every location, 100% of those profits is Starbucks corporate. So at scale, if you can somehow stomach the capital investment, it typically does actually result in a more valuable business. However, anytime I speak to this with the founder about this, I usually just say, hey, look, if you're the founder and you own a large percentage of the company, if not 100%, I mean, you know, McDonald's is a multi-hundred billion dollar franchise. That's, of course, the extreme scenario of how successful a brand can be. But there's more than enough upside in the franchise game. You know, you can point to founders who within 3 to 4 years have become worth nine figures of a few bootstrapped founders. Again, that is the exception, not the rule, but it shows what's possible. So as far as I'm concerned, that's more than enough money. And it really just becomes a question of how much does speed matter? Because franchising does allow for quicker growth because, again, you are outsourcing that capital. Crumbl Cookies wouldn't have grown nearly as fast if they weren't franchising, right? If they had to spend the money to open every single store, hire every single employee at every location, it's just a much different conversation. And the last thing I'll just say on this is that I think there's a myth amongst people outside the franchise world that they shouldn't franchise because of quality control. I really just think that's a factor of lack of training, if anything, or poor franchisee selection, one or the other. And you didn't align maybe expectations with the reality. The operations training wasn't good enough, but it's usually an issue there, not with the franchise model. Because in reality, if you think about it, a franchisee, they're spending $500,000 plus minimum usually to get a location open. It is in their best interest to listen to the franchisor, to the expert. Now, I'm aware that a lot of franchisees have a lot of opinions, but at the end of the day, they're there to try to maximize their investment. And if you go a corporate route like Starbucks, you're hiring a W-2, you know, a store manager who's employed, and it's hard to get that level of buy-in when they don't have skin in the game. They can leave the job and get a, you know, manage a different coffee shop or maybe work in a different form of hospitality, but they are not on the hook for an SBA loan or anything like that. And so I don't truly think that the issue of franchising is ever a quality control issue. All right, moving on. Who will win the Nashville Chicken Wars? Well, to me, this is kind of like the question of the sub sandwich wars, where I don't really think that's much of a war because Jersey Mike's is dominating the sub game. And then when it comes to Nashville Chicken, it's really Dave's Hot Chicken and then all the other guys. You know, you got HCK Chicken, you got Daddy's Chicken Shack, Crimson Coward, and so on. And, you know, these are brands with all, you know, some 5, 10-ish, maybe 20, 25 units tops. And then you have Dave's Hot Chicken, where they have 169 locations open as of the beginning of this year, and another 100 in development this year, or over 100 in development, but they expect to get roughly 100 to 105 open. And so we're talking at the end of 2024, they're going to have close to 300 units open. And so they're just absolutely dominating. And they really are the ones who have popularized this movement. It's kind of parallel to the whole cookie craze where people saw Crumbl's success and have tried to now cash in on it by starting their own concept and franchising it. You know, folks saw Dave's Hot Chicken and the lines out the door and people raving about the product. And they've tried to cash in as well. But I don't think anyone's going to catch Dave's Hot Chicken. Who knows how much room it has to run as far as the unit count? And, you know, at what point do they kind of reach a threshold where people who really go crazy for that kind of style of chicken sandwich is just saturated and they've hit maybe all their core customers? And, you know, can they then get into this next tier where they steal market share from Chick-fil-A and Raising Cane's? And, you know, KFC's had some bad years recently, so perhaps not KFC, but still, KFC's doing 1.3-ish million a year in revenue. So yeah, it will be interesting to see, you know, how high Dave's Hot Chicken can fly, but it'll be fun to watch. Last question here that I'll answer. What is the best way to match investors with operators? This is a question I get often. I don't think there's a good solution out there, but I will say this. If you own franchises, there are absolutely a lot of wealthy individuals looking to fund you, help you expand, et cetera. You know, they don't want to be the day-to-day person running the businesses. They're there to provide capital, maybe some guidance, but it's your sweat equity. So yes, you'd have to give up some equity, but depending on your method for expansion, it could be a good opportunity. If you listen to our recent podcast with Lucas Mitchell, you know, he talks a lot about his strategy, and I really keyed in on it because I think it was fascinating how he grew with a mix of raising equity in addition to SBA debt, and then he ended up funneling all that into conventional loans and rolling in profits to go from 5 locations to 13 and now to 20 plus locations he has. So he's only ever raised $700K in capital and today has 20 locations. Now, again, he doesn't own 100% of it because he did have to raise some money, but, you know, he owns a very, very big chunk of it. And it's a phenomenal outcome that's awaiting him eventually one day. So all that to say, franchisees that's out there, investors, there was tons of quality operators looking for capital that maybe would prefer that versus levering up with the SBA. I will give FranShares a shout out. My friend Kenny Rose is the founder there. I wouldn't say this is a full service offering ready today. They do seem to be focusing more on a deal by deal basis with certain brands and taking money, you know, via retail investors who want to have some passive ownership in franchises, which is it's a pretty cool model they have. But they are capable, I believe, of helping operators maybe get funded, you know, and bigger multi-unit operators of some established brands. So Kenny, if you're listening, I hope I got that somewhat accurate. And then the next thing I'll say is, though, if you are an investor or an operator and have questions about this, feel free to DM me on Twitter, reply to the newsletter, what have you. I don't really have anything official around this. I don't profit off this at all, but I do kind of have a list on either side of operators who would welcome capital and investors who are, you know, looking to deploy it to franchise operators. So DM me and I'm happy to connect. Maybe I should start some type of more official just matchmaking platform. Maybe we can add it to the Crockett research platform. I'm not sure, but overall, unfortunately, not a great way to marry this problem. However, I think it is possible, you know, if you're an operator, just get on Twitter too, talk about what you're doing. You'll be surprised at the people who come out of the woodwork to talk with you and maybe be a part of the next phase of your journey. All right. Well, that was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 questions. I'm going to cut it off there. This was fun. Hope you got some value out of it. And yeah, I'll see you guys soon. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to Franchise Empires. We're coming to you soon with actionable insights to take the next step on your franchise journey. So make sure to subscribe on Apple, Spotify, Google, or wherever you listen.